Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be speaking with Todd Churches. He is the co-founder and CEO of Big Blue Gumball. And we're going to be talking about visual communication, what it means, how it can impact you, and how it can make you better. He's from New York, New York, and he's on the show today. Todd, welcome to the show.
David, thanks so much. Good to be on with you. And I have to say this, I've never been to Maine, so this is the closest I've come. So
well, you need to get up here. Come on. Come up in the fall.
I definitely do.
Not come up in the winter. It's how it is. No problem. You have a slogan, "We make training entertaining" at Big Blue Gumball. First, I have to ask the question before we get into the topic today. Where did the name Big Blue Gumball come from? And so tell me that first.
Yeah, we get asked that all the time, which is a curious question, as opposed to I have a company with my brother, so rather than being Todd and Steve's consulting company or Church's Brothers Consulting, actually about, I forget when it was, around 2000 during the dot-com era, my brother and I came up with an idea for a startup internet company, and it was kind of like a hub for people to meet and things like that. And we came up with the idea of Big Blue Gumball as we were just brainstorming ideas. It's colorful. We both love the color blue. Both love gumballs. And we couldn't get funded for our company, but we kind of like put that name aside and said, we're going to use this for something someday. And then years later when we formed our company, we were just talking and it's like, we've got to be called Big Blue Gumball. So it was kind of, we weighed the pros and cons and of having a name like that, but as you can imagine, it gets people's attention and kind of stands out.
It absolutely does. Well, we're going to chew through the information, no pun intended, today. We're going to chew through the information.
And the gumball, just so you know, one other thing, it represents whatever you want it to be in terms of metaphors, which is a big part of our business, but it represents the world, the globe, the planet Earth. The world is like a big blue gumball, and how it is, we leave it up for other people to decide.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, your firm talks a lot about visual thinking and communication. And, first of all, I think the question is, could you define what visual thinking is and how it applies to visual communications, especially in the HR world that we're talking about today?
Sure. I mean, the best way and the simplest way is the expression, a picture is worth 1,000 words. We have thousands of words. In the HR business, we have so much jargon, we have millions of words that other people don't understand. So visual thinking is all about using visual techniques to communicate an idea, to think it through, to problem solve, and to communicate it to others. So we have a picture in our own mind of what we want the future to look like. The challenge is, how do we get that picture that's in our mind into someone else's mind? So the visual thinking is the vision or the picture that we have. Visual communication is what helps translate and transfer that idea into someone else's mind. So that's the basis of visual communication and visual thinking.
So your firm looks to educate, engage, and excite people, right? That's kind of where it goes into the three areas that I see. Tell me how you think this visual communication skill set can be, maybe educated to HR professionals. We'll start there.
Okay, great. Yeah, our 3 E's philosophy is our company motto, and it's our approach to everything we do. So educate is about, and there's a word that starts with I that goes along to each one. So educate is about informing, information. What do we want people to know, understand, and to learn? So how are we going to educate them, transfer that knowledge? Engage is how we're going to capture and then hold someone's attention. So that's how do we capture their interest. That's the I word that goes along with that. And then excite is about inspiring. How do we get people inspired to change, to do something, to take some kind of action? So that's the educate, engage, and excite. So educate, from an HR perspective, is what do we want people to know and learn? And we have to translate a lot of HR speak into other speak. How do we translate HR speak into the language of finance, the board, the CEO, marketing, sales? So a lot of times our communications from an HR perspective get lost in our jargon. So we need to translate that into other speak. And one way of doing that is through visual thinking. So one example might be using a metaphor or analogy. So if you're talking about something HR related, you might translate into an analogy that's dollar related that finance might understand, or that's creative that marketing would understand. So it's about speaking the language of other sides of the business as well as externally with clients.
When a professional is looking to improve their communication skills, we all, as we grow older in our, you know, in our methods of communication, know what works and doesn't work. How do you get people to engage in the conversation about trying to improve that communication, improve that that influence that they then hold within the C-suite level, or even maybe at the C-suite level when they want to talk to clients? How do you take on that project? Tell me a little bit about maybe things that you've done that people can relate to.
Okay. Well, one thing is it's challenging on the radio to be visual. So one of the ways of doing that is through visual language. So, for example, if we were sitting face-to-face, I might take out a picture or take out a piece of paper or a napkin, sketch something out, or get up at a whiteboard or a flip chart and sketch something out. That's a great way of communicating an idea visually, face-to-face. When you're on the phone or doing it virtually, it becomes more challenging. So that's where the visual language comes in. So that's where using the key components are using stories, using storytelling, which I'm sure we'll talk about, using metaphor, analogy, and using visual imagery. So those are the key techniques that we can use verbally when we literally can't see to communicate visually through our ear. So one of the things that we always say is, you know, Martin Luther King did not get up with PowerPoint slides to do his I Have a Dream speech, right? So that's one of the most classic communications or presentations of all time. What he did is painted a picture with words, created a vision for an idealized future state, and we could all see those metaphors and analogies. In fact, that's one of the blog posts I wrote was about, it was called Martin Luther King, the King of Visual Communication, just because no one did it better than him. But we use visual communication all the time.
When you're looking to talk to employers about, hey, this is something I think you should improve, how do you go in and or what type of employer comes to you and says, hey, we think we have an issue of communication internally?
Well, one thing is every company could be better. So even if companies are good at it, even companies that do communication or media professionally, they could still benefit from it. So, and we see it all around us. We see it on billboards, TV commercials, on the internet. For example, if a blog post comes up, are you going to read the one that's all text, or are your eyes going to be drawn to the one that has a cool or interesting image associated with it? Images could be literal, or they could be metaphorical. So that's something that we could talk about as well. But I think everyone wants to be better at communicating, and I think the bottom line is it's fun. Visuals are fun. It makes things creative, and it cuts through the clutter. And I think everyone wants to be able to get their message out. We're all bombarded with how many messages, how many emails per day. How do you cut through the clutter? It's by making messages educational, engaging, and exciting.
When you're talking about storytelling, let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that's an area where people can certainly relate. Some people are great storytellers, right? They get on the air, they can just, you know, they can talk up a story. People always stand around and they talk. Others struggle with that. How does, first of all, why is that so important? And then second, how does somebody who doesn't necessarily have that skill set, you know, look to improve it when they may be challenged in that area?
Yeah. One of the things is visual communication and storytelling have been around longer than the written word. So if you think about it, culture has been communicated for generations throughout all of history verbally before writing existed. And then we had cave drawings, which were visual communication, which came before writing. So what's interesting is that we're actually almost going back to our primitive nature. We're actually going back to how culture and language and tradition has been translated throughout all of mankind, basically. So getting back to your question on storytelling, we all tell stories. I think it's when we try to come up with a story that it's a struggle. But if you just speak from the heart and you tell someone about your personal experience. So, for example, say a manager just hired a new employee, and this employee is struggling. A manager, by just telling a story of, you know what, when I first started here, I went through the same exact thing, and this is what I struggled with. And I was telling someone recently, just here's a story we were doing, talking about change management and how people are resistant to change. And years ago, I was working for a company, and they announced that we were switching to this new technology from DOS to something new called Windows. and I was, as a non-technology person, I was terrified by change in general.
Yeah.
But the change is my, you know, the only constant is change. I know that, but I like things to stay nice and stable and secure as they are. But anyway, they were switching from DOS to Windows. I said, it took me so long to learn this DOS thing. How am I ever going to learn Windows? And who knew what Windows was at the time? So basically, I was terrified about doing it. They came over and showed me. I was literally the last person in my company on the floor. They were like, Todd, you're the last holdout. We need to switch everyone over, and you're like hanging on to this thing. They showed it to me. They switched it over. And in 5 minutes, I was like, wow, this is so cool. If they had just showed me that 3 or 6 months earlier, I wouldn't have been as terrified of the change. I would have embraced the change because I would have been excited by this new thing, which was easy to use, visually fun and cool and innovative. But what happened was they didn't communicate it well. And they didn't. So if someone says, if I'm going through a change with someone or leading someone through a change, if I tell them this story of how I struggled and hung on to the past, but now, look how quickly I embrace the future. Someone else may say, you know what, that resonates with me. I can relate to that. Okay, I'll give this a shot. So that's something parents do with children, grandparents do. Managers should be doing more of that as well, telling stories that inspire people and that educate people and get people engaged and motivated to try something different.
It is a combination of storytelling and visual cues, isn't it? That best makes this work, because you're right. I mean, one of the things I've noticed in doing speaking and presentations, it used to be PowerPoint was all the way to go. Well, now it's more pictures. You put pictures up on the screen, and they seem to relate to it better. There's an emotion. There's a feel that comes by it. And so if you tell a story while you're speaking, they relate to the picture more than they did the words on the screen.
Yeah. There's this whole death by PowerPoint thing, and PowerPoint has a bad reputation as, like, my brother uses the expression, we're trying to eliminate PowerPoint as being a torture device to being a communication device. So we've all sat through really horrible PowerPoint presentations where it's slide after slide of text or bullets and people reading to us like we were 5 years old being told to. People use their PowerPoint slides as a teleprompter almost, or as their notes. While what they should do is put an image up on the screen, maybe 3 or 5 words. Like if you see the presentations of Steve Jobs, and there's a great book called The Presentation Secrets of Steve Jobs, he did that. He put up a visual image, maybe 2 or 3 words, and that's it, and you talk to that. So one example of that is, in all the leadership training I do, we have this great image of a car on an open highway, and the slogan just says, leadership is a journey. So we could spend an hour just talking about that one slide, that one image, and that one metaphor of, you know, in what ways is leadership a journey, and then we dig down into all the metaphors that are within this picture. So, for example, if you look through the windshield, you see this long open road in the middle of America. So the windshield represents the future. It's the road ahead. It's the obstacles that we can't see that are over the horizon. The rearview mirror represents the past. Where did we come from? How did we get here? And also taking time for reflection, the whole idea of the mirror as reflection. So sometimes we need to pull over and stop and reflect, as we do when we take a training program or just hit the pause button and talk about how'd that project go. And then the third metaphor in that image is the dashboard. How do we measure success? So in HR, we have tons of metrics. The key is, are they meaningful metrics? Are we measuring? We could put in SMART goals. We could put in all these metrics. But are we measuring the right things in the right way? So just those three images, the windshield, the rearview mirror, and the dashboard, are three metaphors that we could talk about for an hour. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, which is also a metaphor, by the way. So sometimes we mix our metaphors.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
But even the question of, you know, as a leader, are you in the driver's seat, the passenger seat, the back seat, or not at all? So even that, wow, that's all of a sudden people are talking about where should, you know, sometimes we need to be in each of those locations. So I don't want to beat this metaphor to death, but literally we spend an hour just on this one picture and go down all kinds of, you know, paths and roads, even those are metaphors, in terms of discussing what leadership is all about, just using the journey or the drive down the highway as the analogy.
We're talking to Todd Churches, CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball. We're going to be right back. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
I am pleased to announce another national sponsor for the HR Power Hour. It is the Northern Insurance Group. They do business, commercial, and personal insurance and are licensed agents in 28 states. Northern Insurance Group is an independent insurance agency with a staff that offers over 60 years of experience. They represent a carefully selected group of reputable insurance companies that will make the best decisions for their clients. Whether you are an individual, a group, an association, or a business, their staff is committed to excellence and making sure that you get the right insurance. You can count on an experienced staff at Northern Insurance Group to put together the best program available to you. So go to northerninsurancegroup.com. That's northerninsurancegroup.com. Or call 207-878-7602. That's 207-878-7602. HR Power Hour is proud to have you as a sponsor. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. We are talking with Todd Church's CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball. Great name. And interesting topic having to do with visual communication and also visual cues. You know, in the last segment, we talked a lot about metaphors. Todd, I think it would be important now to kind of give a background on who you are and where you got this information from, because it's interesting, and I think people would be able to relate to it well.
Okay, sure. Yeah, before I ever envisioned getting into the HR, learning and development, OD field, I started out my career in the entertainment industry. I always wanted to work from the age 12 or 15. I always wanted to work in television. I wanted to be behind the scenes, but one of those people who developed shows, came up with ideas for shows, or was a network executive. So I worked in newspapers when I was in college. I did an internship at NBC News in New York as part of my master's program. And then I started work. My first job out of college was Ogilvy and Mather Advertising in New York City. So working for a top ad agency was an amazing experience. I was exposed to, I worked on a little bit on Hershey's, a little bit on Kimberly-Clark, a little bit on Kleenex. So I worked on all these different ad campaigns, mainly in the media buying end of things. So when you're doing that, when you're around advertising and TV, you start to think about what's the story you're telling. You know, how are you going to get people basically to buy product through telling them a story? So that's the first time. And I was also an English literature major and concentrated in Shakespeare and poetry when I was younger. So the last thing I ever thought I'd be in was in the HR field. So I always thought I'd be in the creative side of things. Not that HR isn't creative. In fact, that's one of the keys is, you know, you can make HR more creative by incorporating some of these elements. So then, after working in advertising for a while, I decided if I wanted to work in TV, I needed to be in LA. You know, everyone's like, go West, young man. You know, you got to be out in Hollywood. That's where all those types of jobs are. So I packed my bags. My parents dropped me off at the airport, and I went out there with no contacts, no jobs. And then little by little, I got a few temp jobs, internships. I worked for Michael Nesmith of the Monkees for about 9 months in the mailroom. You know, people say, you know, start out in the mailroom. That's one of those cliches. The challenge is when I'm coaching people now, like young people coming out of school, is there's no mailroom anymore because there's no mail. You know, there's no email room.
Very true.
Yeah. So it's like that's one of the challenges for people. How do I get that experience? One way is through temping. Another way is, you know, we could talk about that separately. That's HR related. But that's how I started out in the mailroom, as some of the other people did. Then I worked for Aaron Spelling during Dynasty. That shows how old I am. Putting scripts together, inserting the pink pages in place of the blue pages, that type of thing. Then I was in casting at Columbia Pictures. Then I was in comedy at Disney, which was an amazing experience, working for a writer-producer, coming up with ideas for sitcoms. And then I ended up at CBS in the drama program development area. All of those were assistant-level positions, and I struggled to get to the next level. And then a friend out of the blue called me from a theme park company and said, are you interested in the project coordinator position? And I was not going anywhere at CBS, so I jumped over to the theme park side of things, and I ended up there for a number of years. I managed a theme park project in China, and I did a number of different things. But what's interesting, the common thread of all of those, whether it was advertising, TV, or theme parks, it was all about entertaining people, engaging people, telling stories, motivating people, and getting them to have fun. I mean, if you think about that, that's what the whole business exists for. So that's where entertainment, storytelling, metaphors and analogies really got ingrained in me. So just as one example, when you go on a theme park ride, the ride starts when you get online. So if you think about going to Disneyland or Disney World or Universal Studios, there's always a pre-show, whether it's a video or some kind of thematic element that creates an environment before you actually set foot on the ride. So you could be on the line for 2 hours, but then the ride takes 3 minutes, but that was part of the experience. The way that translates into the HR world is when we're doing a training, we think in terms of the person's experience. Their experience doesn't start when you say, hi, welcome to the program. Their experience starts when they first get the email announcing the program. The experience continues through all communications leading up to that as you try to build up their excitement. And when they get to the room, we use music, we have visuals on the screen, we create an environment. One time we brought in this company called Peak Teams, a great team, a company that specializes in team building, experiential types of events, as the culmination of a leadership program, and we had it at a hotel here in New York, and when you walked into the room, it was set up as the base camp as if you were climbing Mount Everest. So the team building activity was you had to make decisions along the way as a team to get to the peak of Mount Everest. But when you walked in, there was dry ice, there were candles, there were tents set up. You literally walked in and you were transformed from the streets of New York into a hotel lobby. All of a sudden, you were at a base camp at the foot of Mount Everest. That's an amazing example of using metaphor, analogy, and story to immerse people in the experience. That was 7 years ago, and I remember every detail of it like it was yesterday because it was visual and entertaining and engaging.
We're talking with Todd Churches, CEO and co-founder of Blue Ball Gumball. You know, Todd, it's interesting. You're talking about this visual cues, and what you describe is absolutely critical to getting people immersed, right, to get them engaged in mm-hmm. this conversation. And the fact that you remember it, you know, I can go back to certainly times in my career as I go through the career, thinking about times I remember things because of the setting, because mm-hmm. of the speaker, because of the engagement that I had with the process. And you're right. I think when you really think about it, it is the experience that you're talking yeah. about, not just one little element of the factors, everything combined.
Yeah. Yeah. So from an HR perspective, let's say a new employee joins your company. When I joined this company, LiquidNet, which was the company, financial services company I worked for before I formed Big Blue Gumball with my brother, I was at LiquidNet for 3 years. Now they're one of my top clients. When I got laid off from there, my boss said to me, I have good news and bad news. The bad news is we need to cut X number of positions. The good news is we'd like you to continue doing our training. So here it is 4 years later, and I'm still doing their management leadership training. So that's a good thing to think about in terms of keeping those relationships alive and transitioning to a different type of relationship. But when I first started, when an employee first starts at LiquidNet, their business cards are ready. There's a balloon that says welcome at their desk. There's a whole plan for them to get oriented. I've had other jobs that I started where you literally walk in and you're lucky if you have a pen and a pad. And it's like, and actually, I was hired years ago to be the VP of business of operations for a very small executive search firm. The CEO never told anyone I was being hired. She put me in an office, and when I went around to say hi to people, they were like, "Who are you?" So thinking about HR from an orientation point of view, are you engaging people as if you're immersing them in this experience from the second they walk in the door? And actually, even before, you know, if you think about it, just like with that theme park experience, from the time someone's hired, that's where it starts. Every communication, everything that you do says something about the culture and how people are going to be embraced. And I've seen it done poorly, and I've seen it done well. Unfortunately, it's usually somewhere in the middle from my personal experience.
No, I think you're right. I think it depends on the individual, the company, and you know, and the leader, right? So, you know, the leader and how they're engaging their employees, how they're going to stay focused with their employees and what they're looking to get out of their employees.
Yeah.
You know, in the next segment, we're going to talk about leadership and life lessons in leadership. But I just want to stay on the communication theme for the remaining part of this segment.
Yeah.
What do you think are some of the reasons leaders and organizations decide not to do visual communication? What are some of the challenges to doing it?
Well, it's out of the box. I mean, again, that's a metaphor. It's actually a cliche, but it's different. You know, people are taking a risk. When people go with Big Blue Gumball, there's no risk in going with, and I'm not going to name names, we all know who the big training companies are, there's no risk with sending someone out or bringing in the company that's been around for 95 years. They've been doing it. The problem is they've been doing it the same way for 95 years. Maybe they've changed a little bit. I've worked for a few of them, so I could speak, you know, from an internal perspective. But it's kind of like, you know, Bob Dylan lyric, when you've got nothing to lose. So it's like when people go with Big Blue Gumball, we come in, we have nothing to lose by offering people like an out-of-the-box solution, because if they want the old tried and true, they're going to go with the traditional companies because we can't compete with them in terms of their history and their you know, the resources they could bring to the table. But if you want a fast speedboat as opposed to a big battleship, we could customize a program on the fly, literally overnight. Like if you said to us on the night of day one, we want to do something different on day two, we can tweak it and get it done and do it on the fly. The bigger companies have trouble doing that. So I think that's one of the key obstacles. That's the key thing that makes it hard to sell Big Blue Gumball, is that it's even the name. We met with an ad agency in New York, and the CEO actually said to us, I would never hire a company. I like you guys, but I would never hire a company called Big Blue Gumball. And when we asked why, he said, I couldn't sell it internally. People would think it was stupid, and they just wouldn't take the training seriously. So our attitude was, you know, the name represents who we are, our style, our approach. It's kind of irreverent. It's kind of fun and tongue-in-cheek, or gumball-in-cheek. But if he didn't like the name, he probably wouldn't like us and our approach. So
right.
We said, you know,
that's
we could change
exactly
our name.
That's exactly correct.
Church's yeah. Brothers Consulting, but we have to be able to walk away, even though it's hard. We're a small business that's just starting out. We sometimes have to say to someone, you know, we may not be the right fit, but we're happy to recommend someone else to you. You know, have you tried this company or that company? They may be more consistent with your culture and the type of traditional training you're looking for. So I think that's, you know, again, good and bad. The good thing is when someone goes with us, it usually shows that they have the type of culture. And when people contact us, a lot of times out of the blue, they find us on LinkedIn or just, you know, in one of my blog posts or whatever, they'll say, we're looking for something different. You guys seem different. And that's the start of the conversation.
Oh, excellent. Well, you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're certainly talking with Todd Churches, and CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball. We're going to be right back, and we're going to be talking about life lessons in leadership. You're listening to News Talk WLOB. I want to introduce you today to a new HR Power Hour sponsor. It's the AARP. They, of course, are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization with a membership of, yes, more than 37 million people. Here in Maine, there are over 230,000 members, and their office is located right here in Portland, Maine. Their work spans the entire state, and they are a trusted source for lifestyle tips, news, and educational information, AARP products, and certainly the AARP magazine. AARP is a great organization. They help people turn their goals and dreams into real possibilities. They strengthen communities and fight for the issues that matter most to families, such as healthcare, employment security, and retirement planning. So I want to thank the AARP as a new member of the HR Power Hour sponsor family. So for more information about the AARP in Maine, go to www.aarp.org/ME.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan. Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan. Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. Our sponsors for today's show, AARP, taking on issues that matter. Northern Insurance Group, meeting your business, commercial, and personal insurance needs. And the law firm of Jackson Lewis, all we do is work. And we are talking with Todd Churches, CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball. Still love the name, Todd. I don't care what people say. Love the name.
Gumball in your mouth.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so we're going to be talking about life lessons in leadership. You have some tips here. You have some information that you want to provide. So tell me about this first. Go ahead. Tell me what it is.
Sure. Basically, the whole idea of life lessons in leadership is that there's a saying that we love that's one of our mantras is that managers are trained, leaders are developed. So when you think about management training, you know, companies bring us in and say, you know, we want to train people in being better managers. So that's the process side of things. That's, you know, how do you delegate? How do you manage time more effectively? How do you track and, you know, put metrics in place and do all those types of process things? The leadership side is developmental. That happens over time. So when people say, you know, bring us in to do a three-day leadership program and say, you know, we want to start on Tuesday morning, we want everyone in the room to be leaders by Thursday afternoon, it's almost like making sausages. You're not just jamming, you know, meat into a, you know, whatever they make sausages with, and at the other, you're coming out with sausages on the other end. It doesn't work that way. So the whole idea behind life lessons in leadership is that who we are and how we are as leaders, our values, our way of operating, problem solving, thinking, interacting with people, communicating, that builds up over our whole life. So part of the life lessons in leadership is using that metaphor of the journey, the leadership journey we talked about before, is pulling over to the side of the road, looking in the mirror, and saying, you know, who am I and how am I as leaders? There's a book called Why Should Anyone Be Led by You? It's also a classic Harvard Business Review article. So if you think about that question, why should anyone be led by you? It's scary, isn't it, if you think about it?
Absolutely.
It's like, they have to be managed by you if they report to you. They only have to be led by you if they choose to follow you.
That is right.
And they see you as a leader.
That's right.
So that's where we get people to really reflect on why would I want to follow me? You know, it's almost like with presentations, when people deliver like really bad bullet point presentations, and we say to them, would you have wanted to sit through your own presentation? They say, probably not. It's like, well, why are you torturing everyone else with it? You know, same thing with leadership. It's like, if you wouldn't want to be led by you or someone like you, your previous show, you had a guest who talked about the no a-hole rule, and it's like there's too many people out there who lead still by the command and control philosophy instead of being a leader and getting people to follow them, and that's where these life lessons in leadership come in.
No, you're absolutely correct, and I think that, you know, one of the things that I tell people is people have a choice. When you're looking at processes, it's pretty simple. It's a process. Mm-hmm. It's a big difference.
Right.
And you do need to – look, you don't – it's true. You don't need to like somebody to work with them. But mm-hmm. you do need to have them respect and understand that you as a leader, they have to believe in you. They don't have to necessarily, you know, be wanting to go outside and have a drink with you. There's a big difference mm-hmm. between that feeling and trying to get people, especially new leaders, to understand that, where they try to use their charm rather than their ability to lead. It is a different thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We have a model that we use I developed called the hierarchy of followership, and it has to do with how likely people are to follow you. And starting from the bottom, it goes from like to admire to respect to trust. So just consistent with what you're saying, David, it's like it's nice if they like you. It's even better if they admire you. But it's most important that they respect you. And at the very top is trust. And they have to trust, they have to respect that you have their interest at heart, that you have the intelligence to make the right decisions, and they have to trust you that they're doing things not out of their own self-interest, but out of the best interests of the people under them. That's where you follow someone, when they say, you know what, they're willing to sacrifice, roll up their sleeves, and that's where the trust kicks in. So, yes, there are times, there are people who I say, you know, I like this person, I'd hang out with them, and they're really funny, whatever, but I don't necessarily trust them. I definitely wouldn't follow them as a leader.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the life lessons of leadership. You have five key areas, and I'll read the five, and then we'll go one by one.
Sure.
First, be yourself. Two, exude confidence. Three, influence others. Four, capture hearts, minds, hands, and feet. And then five, remember that leadership is a journey. Talk about number one, be yourself.
Okay, so be yourself is about kind of like what I was talking about. It's there's a book called True North. There's all these, you know, it's all about people talk about transparency. People talk about authenticity. It's like you have to be who you are. You're not playing the role of a leader. You're being yourself and leading other people. And I think people, that's how you get people to respect and trust you, when you're not artificial. You're not saying one thing and doing another thing. So some of the key, you know, subtitles of be yourself are, you know, live your core values. It's like if you, I've had jobs, and some of the reasons I've left previous jobs were, what I was asked to do was not consistent with who I was, and it wasn't I was asked to deviate or violate my core values, and it doesn't feel good. So, like, for example, I was in a business development job. That's not me. That's not my personality style. And you kind of had a, years ago, in fact, I'm talking about stories. I totally forgot about this. When I was in college, I had a summer job selling vacuum cleaners. The company literally said, go out to these, you know, it's like that I Love Lucy episode where they throw the dirt on the floor and try to, you know, be asked to vacuum it. So that was so not me, and the company was unethical, and, you know, I was just a college kid at the time, about 19. I had to drive around with this big vacuum cleaner, but it wasn't who I was. And even after I made a sale, I felt so bad about it, about myself, because I knew that the company wouldn't, so I quit. I quit. I didn't even take the commission for that sale. I just said, you know, in fact, I went back to the people and I said, you know what, you really, this isn't, you know, they really couldn't afford it, and the company had all these add-on charges, and it just so violated my core values of integrity and ethics. And so if you're not true to yourself, you're not going to get other people to follow you. So it's about authenticity, transparency, and I have a saying that truth builds trust. So just, again, if everything's open, honest, and transparent, I think that's how people trust you. Now, as HR people, there is confidentiality. You can't always spill the beans. There are things that can't be known, but at least say to someone, you know what, this happened, but I can't tell you about it for various reasons. I will respect that as your employee, but it's not like you're hiding something from me or telling one person and not telling another. So I think that's where that's
absolutely,
what
I agree
about.
100%. The second one is exude confidence.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was, to me, confidence is the key differentiator. All things being equal, confidence to me is the key differentiator. I didn't get jobs earlier in my career, mainly when I was in the entertainment industry, because I lacked confidence at the time, and I think that showed. And I think people, when you lack confidence in yourself, people lack confidence in you. So we talk about three types of confidence. One is your own self-confidence. The second is your ability to make other people feel confident in you. And the third type is the leadership confidence, is making people feel confident in themselves. So if you start with your own self-confidence, that breeds hope, optimism, and enthusiasm and confidence all around.
Influence others is number three. Again, we've gone through be yourself, build confidence, and now we're talking about influence others.
Yeah, influencing others, there's a saying, you could have the greatest idea in the world, but if you can't sell it, then it doesn't matter because it's not going anywhere. So we need to be able to sell our ideas, and I think the previous two build up to that. Like, if you're authentic and you're yourself and you feel confident, if you really believe in an idea or initiative, it makes it more likely to get the buy-in of others. So as an HR person, you need to sell all kinds of initiatives. So how you do that, building support networks, getting sponsors, and basically translating your vision into action so that other people get on board with that idea. So, again, it's all about, you know, it's selling. Basically, we're all selling.
We are always selling at all times. That's the fact of life. You're always selling yourself. You're selling, you know, at all times. You're doing that. We're talking about life lessons in leadership. Number four is capture hearts, minds, hands, and feet.
Yeah. Of the five, this is the most visual of them. So picture a stick figure. So picture, you have the head, the body. So the heart, when you talk about capturing people's heart, what's that about? That's about empathy, emotion, passion. So we need to get people on board by getting them passionate about something. You can hear in my voice how passionate I am about this one particular tip. So if you capture people's hearts, and then we talk about capture people's hearts and minds. So it's the emotion, but it's also the logic, giving people the knowledge and using intelligence to capture people on a logical level. So you have the heart level, the logical level. Then you think about the hands. To us, the hands as a metaphor represents collaboration and teamwork. So picture people holding hands or joining hands for a common cause. And then the feet represent motivation and momentum. You know that saying, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. How are we going to take the first step? How are we going to get this initiative going? So if you think about the heart, mind, hands, and feet, the person as a metaphor represents moving forward and building cooperation and getting people passionate and excited about.
Well, you know, of all the five, I'm going to say that's the one I like the most, because that really does capture what I think is the essence of leadership. When you really think about it, it's about capturing their minds, making them believe in it, you know, get them moving to do it, and also having them work with whatever the group is that you're working to do on.
It's not visual. It's like, again, I'm not using a when we do this live, we would have a PowerPoint slide showing that, but I think all the listeners can actually picture that in their minds as if they were looking at a picture. That's the power of visual communication.
No, you're absolutely right. The last one is remember that leadership is a journey.
Okay, that kind of brings things full circle back to that car analogy, that leadership is not a position or a title, it's a journey. It's about moving forward together. It's literally about getting from point A to point B, right? So one of the key things is to enjoy the journey. You're going to go down some wrong paths. Like, just think about my brother and I. When I mentioned I worked in the TV industry and theme park industry in L.A., when I moved back to New York, my brother flew cross-country, and we drove together. If you've ever driven cross-country with your brother or my brother, I don't know if anyone else
has. I have not driven cross-country, and I wouldn't even think about it.
Well, it's an amazing, transformative, life-changing experience. I have to say that. So I would encourage everyone to do that. Maybe you could start with a trip from Maine to New York, and then we can meet for lunch.
I have no problem with that. I go to New York quite a bit, so that's not a problem. But all the way to L.A., matter of fact, or California, no. No, thank you.
Yeah. There's nothing like driving Route 66 to take a trip down, through the past. But anyway, if you think about the journey, it's all about getting from point A to point B. So wherever we are today, that's point A. But if you think about it, and this is going to be really, powerful, today's point A was yesterday's point B, right? And today's point B is tomorrow's point A. So if you think about it, we're literally going from A to B all along. So that's our job. In fact, just to, as a side tangent, because HR people are very involved in coaching, the word coach, I was an English literature major, I'm big on word origins. The word coach comes from a city in Hungary called spelled COSZ, I believe, and that's where the stagecoach was invented in the 1400s. So the word coach is a metaphor for a vehicle of transportation. So how is that?
No, that's really good. I did not know that, but that's very interesting and actually sums up this section very well. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. We will be right back on News Talk WLOB.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello. I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan. Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan. Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. We've been speaking with Todd Churches today. He's the CEO and co-founder of Big Blue Gumball. And great name, great company, great information here today, Todd. I really appreciate it.
You know, thank you, David.
You do a blog. You do a blog, and I saw it on thehiredguns.com. Mm-hmm. And it's called 14 Books That Will Make You More Innovative in 2014. Tell me a little about why you wrote this and what the whole point of the whole blog was. Obviously, it's about 14 books, but why these 14?
Well, first of all, I have the column is monthly, so every month I write a different article on the theme is basically leadership and learning, but all of my articles, the common link is that they're all about visual communication or visual thinking, either explicitly or just as the subtext. So when they asked me last year, I did 13 for 13, 13 books that will help you be more improve your personal productivity. This year they wanted 14 for 14 because that was such a huge popular blog post to start off the new year. So I came up with the topic of innovation this year. So the theme is 14 books that will help you be more innovative and more creative. And so basically the books I picked were all related to innovation and creativity. I think HR people would definitely love checking out this list because they're different types of books. So, for example, some are about design, better PowerPoint, presentation skills. But one of the ones that's related to leadership and that's more universal to business professionals is the book called Quick and Nimble. It literally just came out 2 weeks ago. I don't know if people are familiar with the New York Times Sunday Business section interviews a CEO every week by Adam Bryant is the name of the author. And he has a book called The Corner Office, so that's the name of his column. So it's great. Every week he asks CEOs, how do you hire? Tell me about your first leadership job. So that he compiles his first couple hundred in a book called The Corner Office, and then but his weekly blog weekly article is about that. So that was one book. His book just came out called Quick and Nimble. That's about the six things that make a company innovative. So that was one of my picks. I won't get to all the different topics, but each of the titles on the list in some ways relates to visual thinking, visual communication, or innovation. So, but some of the other blog posts that people actually get a kick out of are a simple idea. So, for example, one is black sock decision making. Any ideas, any guesses, David, what that might be
black
about?
Black sock decision making.
Yes.
There are no, if you all have black socks, it's not a hard decision.
Correct. That's you're right along the same line. When I used to go for pack up for a business trip to go away when I was traveling to do training or consulting at different locations, I'd spend a half hour just deciding which socks to pick, which would go with which suit, which would match the tie. And I said, you know what, this is such a waste of time. So I basically put all those colorful, fun socks on the side and got like 10 pairs of just plain black socks. Right there, I eliminated
yep.
one decision I had to make. So if I ask you, how can you translate that metaphor, that 30-second story into a business metaphor analogy you could use, what would you say?
Well, certainly simplify and, you know, make it so that some things that are not as important a decision in your life is more an automatic pilot, if you want to call it, so that you can spend the time in the areas that really improve what needs to be done.
Exactly. You know your stuff. You should have your own radio show.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
No, but you're exactly right. Think about all the decisions we have to make. And if you could just eliminate two or three of them, things that you have to choose all the time, what can you commoditize? What can you standardize where it's not even a decision anymore? You don't have to think about it. You will free up your brain to make the decisions that really matter. So that's what black sock decision making. One other post, another color, little pink spoon. The little pink spoon. Do you guys have Baskin-Robbins up there?
We do, yes.
Okay. So the little pink spoon, the purpose is what?
It brands Baskin-Robbins.
Yeah, it brands Baskin-Robbins, but it gives you a taste of something to entice you to buy a cone or a gallon.
Correct.
The same type
yes.
of thing is, what's your little pink spoon? How can you give people a taste of what you do so that they'll buy all of what you do? So one of the things that my brother and I do, we will go into a company and do a free 60-minute or 90-minute lunch and learn or workshop for free just to give you a taste of what we do. It's kind of like years ago, the Broadway show Pippin advertised by showing Ben Vereen dancing for 60 seconds and said, you just got one free minute for the other 119 minutes. Come see the show. That's our little pink spoon philosophy. Give people a little taste so that they want to buy the whole cone. So that's the little pink spoon. And so think about that in your job. What can you say? Here's a perfect example. Let's say there's a meeting from an HR perspective. HR, we're always talking about we need to get a seat at the table, right? We want a voice in the company. We want to be seen as strategic partners. So if you give someone, say you send someone an article about something that will relate to them, and or you sit in on a meeting and you say something that shows you add value, that's the little pink spoon. Then they start thinking, you know, we need to get David in this meeting. He really knows his stuff. You know, so you're giving people a little taste of what you have to offer so that they want the whole thing.
No,
make
it makes
sense?
Perfect sense. It absolutely makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And then one other that's more of a model is we call it the passion skill matrix. So picture a four-box matrix. So this is your visual thinking, and this is a test of my visual communication skills. We love four-box matrices in the consulting and the HR world, right? We like to put things in those
yes,
boxes.
Yes, we love boxes. We do.
Yeah. So along the left side is passion. So picture a heart and passion. along the bottom is, or going across, is the star. So if you think about it, we ask people, what are the top things that you love to do, and what are the top things that you hate to do? Secondly, what are the things that you're great at, and what are the things that you're terrible at? So if you think of those boxes, the things that you're great at and love to do, that's in the upper right quadrant. We call that your sweet spot. And that's where you want to be spending most of your time, or as much as possible, doing what you love and doing what you're great at, because that's where you shine, that's where you add value, that's where you get recognition. The upper left box is what you love, but you're not great at yet. We call that the growth zone. That's your area of development. So for one example, might be public speaking. Let's say you love public speaking, you love inspiring people, but you're just not great at it yet. Through practice, through coaching, through getting feedback, you'll get better. Because if you're passionate about it, just like learning an instrument or playing a sport, if you love it, you're going to work at it. The bottom right, is the default zone. Those are things that you are good at, but you hate. Can you think of anything like that for you, David?
No, such thing.
All right. But for me, I happen to be, I was an English literature major. I'm a pretty good writer. So people would always ask me to edit, proofread, and spell check this stuff.
That's an area I do it. I don't love it at all.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. So we like to do it because we like giving back. But when you become the default person and it falls in your default zone, it really is tedious. But that's an opportunity to develop someone else. That you may need to push back. That's where you may need to give someone another resource. But there's things that you could do to get, but if you spend all your time in the default zone, like you're great at it, but you hate it, you can't sustain that. You're going to burn out really quickly and be very unhappy. And the last one, talking about unhappy, is the failure zone, which is the lower left corner. If there's something that you're not good at and you hate it, if you're spending all day in your failure zone, that's where you need to start looking for another job before they do that involuntarily to you. So you can't sustain that. So I've had jobs that I didn't love. I took them for either the title or the money earlier in my career, but you can't last very long in that. So one way to use this for yourself is think about where you're spending your time. You want to be in the sweet spot in the growth zone as much as possible. I would almost say like 80-20 if you can. You want to be doing the things you're good at, but you also want to spend time developing your skills in other areas so you don't stagnate. But you can also use this as a hiring tool. You can also use this as a coaching or management tool, because think about where your people are. Where do you have your people spending their time? If they're in the wrong box, they're going to leave. So if you want to retain people and keep them engaged and happy, it's a great employee engagement and motivational tool. So it's a simple four-box matrix, and yet it's a great conversation starter for an HR person to use. And I have a blog post that talks about it. It's called Do What You Love, Love What You Do.
Perfect. Well, Todd, this has been a great discussion today about visual communication. I think you've done an excellent job of providing, the listeners ways to really understand what this is all about. Obviously, if they're interested in getting a hold of you, they can go to bigbluegumball.com, or they can certainly, reach out to you directly. We're going to have this information on the HR Power Hour website, hrpowerhour.com, right after the show. They can connect directly with you. I truly appreciate you being on the show today.
David, it was a pleasure. It was great talking to you, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB. And now the HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group. Licensed agents in 28 states, business, commercial, and personal. Go to northerninsurancegroup.com. The Supreme Court will begin hearing arguments in January to determine if severance pay should be taxable or exempt from FICA tax. If the court rules against the IRS, the agency will need to process retroactive refund claims submitted by employers and employees. The IRS has also announced its intent to more closely examine the taxation of tips and service charges in 2014. This will be important to the industries in which tipping is customary, such as hospitality and restaurant industries. And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Northern Insurance Group at northerninsurancegroup.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have two great guests. Lisa Jing, founder and CEO of Synergy at Work. And Dr. Amy Wood. She is the author of Life Your Way. That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.